America's obsessed with pizza. This is the Focus Group.
They're all business, except when they're not. It's the Focus Group with Tim Bennett and John Nash.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Focus Group. Tim Bennett here, as always, with my good friend and co-host, Mr. John T. Nash, waving to you from the, well, I guess from the inner workings of New York City, Manhattan, where the start of it all.
As such.
So be sure to join us here each week. You can find all of our media housed at focusgroupradio.com, including our podcast, TFG Unbuttoned. And thanks to our friends at Deep Discount, been a partner of ours here on the Focus Group. You'll be able to see them in the margins with our other sponsors and click on them and start shopping away. And we appreciate your support of them. So, Mr. Nash, I was up late last night, or not last night, but a couple nights
Sunday.
Ago. Sunday night. We had snow the other night. With the Super Bowl, and I know you were a little bit bored about it. We talked about on the podcast that we would talk a little bit about the commercials. But did you watch the full game and the commercials, or did you cheat? You sent me a link to all the commercials in the New York Times.
90% of the game I saw. I watched some of the ads offline, but I basically had the Super Bowl experience where I saw the ads as they come up, and I did have a clear winner for me. I wonder if you could guess what it was. Yeah. It was not an ad that was announced before the Super Bowl. It had no social media, let's have previews. It just appeared. Motion graphics, animation, and it was, I thought it was really well done.
Oh, I know what it was. I watched it. I'm going to guess, and I'm going to say, I saw this ad come up, and I also did not know they were doing it. And I said, John and Bob are going to be all over this ad. Chat GPT.
Bingo. Five gold stars for me. I thought that it was so well done. I mean, it was an animation with basically like a dot matrix. It starts with people hunting, you know, and then it's exploration, going to the moon, and then suddenly it's an artificial intelligence.
The best ads usually have no celebrity, John.
Tim, this is...
Nobody learns that lesson. Right?
But this had no celebrity. It was a beautifully told little story, a 60-second spot. It was a total surprise. Contrast that with recreating When Harry Met Sally, the deli scene. You knew it was going to come because the clip has been aired so many times. Like, I'll have what she's having. I mean, it doesn't matter who they put in there. I don't know.
So, you know, USA does their ad meter. So, you know who was number one, I guess.
I think it deserved to be number one. Why? I would have put ChatGPT up there, but that little Clydesdale foal.
The Budweiser little foal with the... and then number the two was... Number two rolling was one keg. That I rolling the keg. Number two was one that I had missed, but then I watched it. I watched the longer version, but it Lay's potato chips.
The girl who plants the spud and ends up getting a potato that she gives to the truck. Adorable.
I must have run to the bathroom or something during that. I missed it, but
cute. I like it, but again, am I going to buy Lay's potato chips because a little girl in the heartland planted a potato and gave it to the Lay's truck? I don't know. You know.
I thought the message there, though, was that they were grown by small farmers.
Human beings, people and small farmers. Right. You know.
And you and I know Tim Ellis, he used to be at Volkswagen, but he's the head of marketing at the NFL. I thought it was interesting. I thought a lot of the NFL messaging was in contrast to what seems to be the political temperature going on right now, particularly as it pertains to diversity, to respecting people's differences, to respecting women, little girls. I thought there was a lot done there that was done well. I did laugh. Richard and I both screamed. That Martha Stewart, she's still milking that cow, ringing that bell, right? She's still working the register. She was on Skechers. She was on Uber Eats. And somebody said she was on something else. God bless her. She and Matthew McConaughey ringing that bell, getting that coin.
But don't you think there should be a spreadsheet that goes around to ad agencies listing all the celebrities that are already being used so that you don't, you know, run into using someone three or four times? Okay, so the NFL ads, if we want to go back to that for a minute, the first one they aired was a very kind of cool ad where I am special, I am unique, I'm enough. And then the second one was the women's flag football, which I thought was pretty cool because I didn't even know it existed. And I thought the woman did a great when bring out Brady, and he goes, my name is Brady. She goes, I can read. Do you know another ad that I've seen them do this before. Can you guess which other one I thought was highly effective and had no celebrity except it had one of the biggest celebrities on the planet, I suppose?
No, Jesus. Oh, Jesus. Well, you know, they are. A lot of people get the boy, talk about triggering. There was people on Facebook that hated that.
See, now, here's the thing. Bringing
religious in there. And...
Well, you know, here's the thing about Jesus. Not that anybody cares to hear about this, or maybe they do, but he didn't have a lot to say about a lot of things that people,
right.
You know, the Christian right is up in arms about. In fact, that's why I thought the Jesus ad was a little more subtle than I would normally get. Normally, I'd see religion and want to whack it and say, no, this has no place. But basically, the message was, love thy neighbor.
Yep.
And, you know, the first that commandment is one of the hardest to obey forever. Love thy neighbor, because I always see cartoons like love thy neighbor, but they're a different color or they're a different race. No. There's none of that. If you follow the command, it's love thy neighbor. And that's the hardest thing people can do. So I thought that was really good. A couple other ads kind of crossed the radar and made me remember things. But for the most part, I just was kind of like, wow, are we doing
those
we
people
really
were underwhelmed.
Yeah. Is that what the people meter said too?
Yeah. And they ranked 57 ads. The lowest ranked ad, could you guess what it was? I don't even remember it. It was Tubi.
Tubi. Did you see the Tubi ads where that looks like the guy had a genetically attached cowboy hat? Did you watch that?
Yeah.
It was weird. Okay. Yeah,
so Tubi was the worst rated again, according to USA's ad meter. Followed by Fetch came into 56. The Coffee Mate ad I thought was horrible with that tongue. It was gross. Your ad, John, that you liked, the ChatGPT came in 53rd. So it was in the bottom 10.
Are you surprised by that?
No, because it was too smart.
Oh.
Right.
Thank you, Tim. Yeah.
No, I mean, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, yeah.
I knew right away it was right up your alley. You know, people want a fart joke and beer, right? I mean, that's kind of what you're looking for in the Super Bowl. I will say I was, maybe it was because it was the end of the broadcast, and I appreciated the Jeep ad with Harrison Ford.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was well done, but every car brand talks about freedom, find your own road, go your own way, which is essentially what Jeep did. But it seemed to stand out only because there were so few. I think there were no car ads, really. It was Jeep and...
Ram trucks?
Ram trucks was it, yeah.
And that was the Three Little Bears fairy tale thing with the guy who's the guy du jour.
Yep. And Ram trucks came in number 19, and the Harrison Ford ad with Jeep came in number 12. But the top three were ads were Budweiser's Little
Clydesdale,
Fool, yeah. Clydesdale, Lay's potato chips, Michelob Ultra number 3, Stella Artois. I
the David
it was cute.
Beckham and Matt Damon. Okay,
that was number 4, and then the one you mentioned, NFL Somebody, came in 5th, and 6th was NFL Flag 50, which was the flag football.
Okay.
So they came in tops. All the other stuff was just kind of clustered in the middle, trying to see if anything stands out. There was an anti-Semitism campaign, came in number 17. And other than that, there was a new Mountain Dew ad, I don't remember it, that came in 24th.
Yeah.
No. Reese's, Ritz. Haagen-Dazs. So there were a lot of known brands, but nobody really stood out. You know, they dumped a lot of money in this Dunkin' Donut ad with Ben Affleck, and that came in 34th.
And again, I saw it, but I couldn't even tell you what happened because it just didn't register.
So I liked the NFL Somebody ad. I thought I also thought the Country Roads ad was brilliant. Did you remember that one from Rocket.com? So it's like a Rocket Mortgage. Did you remember that ad at all?
I seem to think that this is one of the ones that I liked because they were using the song, right?
Right. Country Roads, Take Me Home. It's about kind of Americana or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But what I thought was interesting about it or smart about it was however they figured it out, they had the same song playing when they came back from break. So this spot finished at 23. Mm-hmm. So it didn't score all that high. It was in the middle. But when they came back from break, the whole stadium in the arena down there was singing Country Roads. And I thought it was brilliant that they were able to pull that off. So they knew when their spot was going to run, and then they whatever deal they did with with the
Superdome.
Yeah, skip my name. When they came back, the audience, you know, the crowd was singing "Country Roads," and I thought, well, that was pretty smart. So I like.
Now,
that.
What did you think of the halftime show?
Horrible. But I was told I was an old man and I'm a boomer. But people were all over Facebook about it.
I enjoyed aspects of it. But when you have to watch a show the next morning where they decode what was done and why they did it, like there's apparently a song that he sang towards the end of the halftime show, which was definitely aimed at Drake, you know, the rapper Drake. Because there's a whole big thing going on, a lawsuit and everything, that he accused Drake of being a pedophile. Like, so there's a lot of layers in there. Mm-hmm. Whatever happened just to singing a bunch of songs?
Well, I had an argument with a friend of ours, a mutual friend of ours, and I said it would be the equivalent of them bringing DeVoe out or Devo or the B-52s, right? You'd bring them out, we'd laugh, we'd love it. But it's a subset of a subset of a subset of people that would get it. Or, you know, got the wink and the nod. And I think the halftime show is to entertain, which is why Michael Jackson, Justin Timberlake, people like that that have come out and done the show, Prince, like it or not, I understand rap is part of our culture and understand all that. But when you look at the amount of people watching and the eyeballs on this show, I think you have to take into account that you probably need to be a bit more inclusive.
And I was
also shocked about it was an entirely Black or African American production. Not even the dancers had any diversity. So I thought if you had done something that was all Asian or all Hispanic or all white, there'd be hell to break. And I just thought it turned off. If you look at social media, it turned off a lot of people. But some people liked it. And then when it had to be explained, oh, I get it. And people understood it. But I hated it. I thought it was horrible. I said so. I was called a boomer. Tough shit.
I was called a boomer just because you didn't like the halftime show.
First of all, we're Generation Jones, John, because we're in the middle. We're not really boomers and we're not really Gen X. But anyway. Yeah. So a friend of ours, you know, a friend of ours in Chicago was going back and forth with me about it, as you know who that is.
And she liked it.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's playing contrarian, right? I said to her, you know, I asked her you know, it's horrible. No, it's not. You don't understand. I said, okay. If you have to explain it to me, I can understand Vogue and I can understand Beat It and I can understand Little Red Corvette, but I don't understand the underlying language that a rapper is talking about a pedophile from somebody he's got a beef with.
You know what they could have done? They could have done a Yacht Rock halftime show.
Hilarious.
Christopher
or the Village
Cross,
People.
Sailing takes me away. Well, the Village People, they could have done everything but the one that was used by the president. Yeah.
I'm surprised the Village People haven't been done. Once again, the show, you know, the very first, other than Up With People, Carol Channing was the entertainment. So we've come a long way.
Do you remember Up With People when we were in grade school?
I'm surprised you didn't join.
Up With People.
Did you join them?
No. But how could you join a group? How could you join a group whose main song was Up, Up With People, You Meet Him Wherever You Go? I mean, almost it's like Schoolhouse Rock, right?
It's like when I almost got talked into selling books door to door. It's a cult.
No.
You know, you understand. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Mr. Nash, what caught your eye this week?
What caught your eye? Here's what Tim and John found.
What caught my eye this week is the Nestle Corporation, who creates and sells and distributes Kit Kat, is making a change to their lineup. And it surprises me because here in the U.S., you basically get the milk chocolate Kit Kat. Yeah, that's what's on the shelves all the time. In the fall, Bob and I go crazy when they release these dark chocolate Kit Kats.
Which I've looked for and I can't find.
You have to get them at CVS. Yet they don't show up in grocery stores usually, but at pharmacies. And Bob will go into a pharmacy and he came home one day with 7 bags of this stuff. This is one of the rare times that I'm like, honey, you did good. Go back and get more. Like, we have a stash that lasts us well into the summer. So the headline here
reads, put them in the freezer?
No, we keep them. They're in a cool space, but I should try freezer. Do they taste better?
I love
better?
The freezer. Oh, they're great. Just put a couple in the freezer and try
We'll
them.
Try it. Yeah, that's a great idea. So Nestle reveals that a popular candy bar to be discontinued this summer, and it's the vegan Kit Kat bar, which is very hard to find here in the U.S. Very popular overseas, particularly in Europe. So the article
talks. Why is it vegan? Is it made without butter or something?
That you raise is such a great question. Apparently, what makes it vegan, here's how they say it. So the they're going out of style. They're going to be discontinuing it. It's a drop in global demand. It officially puts an end to a 4-year run on the market for Kit Kat Vegan. They're one of the first corporations to actually do this. A spokesperson for Nestle said, unfortunately, global demand has been reducing to the point that production was making manufacturing more and more complex, and we have now made the difficult decision to discontinue the product. We know there will be some disappointment. However, it will still be available in the UK and Ireland until the summer. Fans of the vegan Kit Kat are understandably upset, but others have taken to social media to express further opinions. So one person says, or change all your Kit Kat products to vegan by removing, here's the part, the 1% dairy. Now, I don't get this, right? But apparently the dairy aspect is what, by moving that out, you can make a vegan candy bar.
I guess the vegans don't drink milk.
Yeah, Tim, I can't figure this out. Bob asked me the same question. He's like, can they have eggs? He goes, can they eat any food at all?
No fun.
Yes, they can food it. So then someone says, and this part I just smiled at on social media, why do all these billionaire companies take away products because of declining sales? I had to actually stop reading for a second because the answer is in the question, right? Like, there's declining sales. Aren't they making enough? So that Facebook person felt that they should just keep making something that wasn't making money because a bunch of people liked it. So if you plan on stocking up on Kit Kat Vegan ahead of the summer's discontinuation, your options are pretty slim to none. Here's the thing that gets me. As of now, fans can grab a single 1.46-ounce bar on Amazon for $7.95 or a 24-bar pack for $73.80. Yeah, you can also find them available for purchase online at Walmart's overseas in the UK and a few other places. Now, I believe that we gave, as Christmas present this year, one of our fave clients. Wasn't that cool thing you found from Japan?
It was a bag of Kit Kats out of Japan.
But they were all flavored, like green tea,
flavors,
right?
Right. I don't know. We'll have to ask her how they were because I don't know. It was certainly we rolled the dice on that. I mean, whether that was going to be a good gift or not, because we thought it was cool. But, you know, when you order overseas like that, I was like, I hope it shows up.
It did. It showed up.
I think she liked it. It was some grocery store out of Tokyo.
And I'm just curious to know, like, because they make, if you go to Japan, like friends have brought stuff back. If you go to Japan, you can get all kind of different Kit Kat bars over there. So I think there was the green tea. There was there's a chai tea. Yeah. There's all these different rice cracker crumble. I don't know. There's all these flavors in there. But there you go, folks. If you're a fan of the vegan Kit Kat bar, which I did not even know existed.
Well, you're not a lesbian.
But I need to add a snare drum sound effect. That's what I need.
It's a vegan Kit Kat bar. Okay. It's like when you tried to make those, you were making brownies or Rice Krispie treats or something with all
they
fake
were brown
ingredients.
Rice.
Pretending you liked them, and I knew you didn't, but you wanted to like them and said you liked them, and I knew you didn't like them, and they were never made again.
I
they
had
were like
this
hard as a rock.
Yes, and they were made with molasses and like.
I could have used that stuff for cement on my walk.
In fact, when I brought them to the studio, we were at Sirius. I was seeing a nutritionist at the time, and I was also gaining weight. And Tim's like, you know,
you're eating rice every meal. You're eating rice
because she's giving you all these carbohydrates. So I brought them to the studio. Katie was our producer at the time. She made a show of like liking it, but you're over there like playing like you're going to break your teeth. It's going to hurt my dental work.
You knew you didn't like it. Don't pretend you liked it. I knew you didn't like it.
How about the time I did the skinny girl brownies that were made with, instead of like, it's the mix and then you added like sweet potatoes or something.
Yeah, and you were telling us how good those were too. I just looked at you.
And you were like, ugh, you want a brownie? You want a brownie? But Tim doesn't hold back. If he doesn't like it, he doesn't like
it. Well, I know you don't like it either, but you pretend, oh, I think I should like this because it's good for me. No, you don't. You could say you don't like it. Just have one less brownie that week.
It's true. It's very true.
Anyway, speaking of foods, I picked a food thing this week too, but mine was pizza.
Mm, you teased that.
And this popped up from food, foodandgourmet.com, I think is the website. And it said, this state orders the most pizza, and it's not New York. Do you have any guess what state orders the most pizza? So this is per capita. So this per state capita. Consumes and orders more pizza and eats more pizza per capita than any other state. I'll give you a hint. It's not in the Northeast, which I thought it would be.
Oh, I was going to guess either Texas. I was going to Texas or California.
I would have never guessed in a million years. Iowa.
I wouldn't have guessed in 2 million years. Iowa?
Yeah, Iowa. Per capita. Iowans eat the most pizza per month on average, 5 times more than the rest of the country, followed by North Dakota and Alaska. And residents of Louisiana come in fourth, but residents of Louisiana also host more pizza nights than any other state, followed by Connecticut and then Iowa. What day do you think is the most popular day to eat pizza?
I'm going to guess, well, I want to say Friday, but I'm going to say Monday.
You were right, Friday.
Oh, Friday.
I
mean,
I think that's because a lot of Catholics would order it and say that, you know, they weren't going to meet that day, although they put pepperoni on it.
Have a fish stick.
Right. So this was according to a study done by Talker Research. They surveyed 5,000 people across the U.S., and they asked them if they had a favorite pizza. People in New Mexico, Hawaii, California, and Texas like spice on their pizza. I'm not so sure I like spice, so hot sauce. Mm-hmm. Michigan and South Carolina are the most bland, so they won't put anything on there. The state that eats the least pizza, with 11% of their population, said they'd never even tried it. Now, who hasn't tried pizza?
Okay, can we guess that state?
Yeah, and this is another one I would have never guessed. So this state was most reluctant. And 11% of their most reluctant to have pizza, so they eat less pizza than anybody else.
Is it one of the Dakotas?
No, but it's near there.
Oh, okay. So it's like Montana or...
No, the other way.
Wisconsin?
Come east. You're close. Wisconsin. Michigan.
11%
of the Michigan population says they haven't even never tried pizza. Who hasn't tried pizza? It's like saying I never drank water.
Did we relocate a bunch of people there that...
Indiana and Vermont are most likely to stick to the same pizza offerings. They said most people will get into the habit of once they order a particular type of pizza, they never change. Is there one that you always order?
Well, we don't... I would do a plain... I guess it would just be like a margarita, you know, plain cheese.
Okay, so you're rare. Most of the states, the most popular pizza is pepperoni.
No.
In Connecticut, Delaware, where I am, in New York State, in New York City, pepperoni is the most popular pizza. The people in Georgia, so they also talked about eating habits. 40% of the people in Georgia will eat the crust first.
I don't know how that works. I mean, Minnesota, they won't fork.
Knife and fork. 53% of the Illinois population with knife and fork. But, of course, they've got that deep dish in
deep
Chicago,
dish.
Which is really lasagna, quite frankly. People, that's not pizza. It's lasagna, casserole.
Yeah, I know.
And one more little quick fact here. This one state is the only one where veggie pizza was the most popular pizza.
Massachusetts?
You got it.
Really?
Did you pull up the list, John? If we were doing the list, I'd have yelled at you for pulling up the list.
I did not. It was a
good for you. I would have never guessed
it.
Yeah, so Massachusetts is about veggie. Everybody else is about meat, supreme, meat lovers, pepperoni. But no, Massachusetts is the only one that likes a veggie. And nobody said any just plain pizza, which I thought was weird. So anyway, that was the pizza habits of us here in the U.S.
I'm still kind of back at Michigan for some reason.
I didn't get it either.
The statistic of never having tasted pizza, when
never
you said
tried
it's like not
pizza.
Having water, never tried it?
Yeah. Okay. It says Michigan had the highest percentage of respondents who said they've never even tried pizza, 11%.
Mm-hmm. Crazy. Well, there you go.
Maybe it was the way the question was asked, but I don't know. I just
how many ways can you ask the question? Have you tried pizza?
Have you ever had pizza? No.
Have you tried a circular dough thing with, I mean, pizza's pizza, right?
Well, I was trying to think if there's something else I could have. Have you had a hot dog?
That's another one. Yeah, I've had hot dogs.
I guess
sure.
Most people have tried a hot dog, right?
Uh-huh.
Maybe you don't. Maybe you eat it all the time. I don't know.
No, Tim, there's something a deeper dive would reveal something through research, I'm sure.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here, folks. And when we return, we have a business birthday for you and a shop talk, which looks at some lessons in business from Dolly Parton. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Focus Group with Tim and John. Learn more at focusgroupradio.com. Now, back to The Focus Group with Tim and John. Available pretty much everywhere.
Hey, thanks for rejoining us here on The Focus Group. I'm Tim Bennett here with my co-host, Mr. John T. Nash. Be sure to check us out at focusgroupradio.com. Also, be sure to check our website out for our business or agency, which is triberry.co. And you can see some of the work that we've done there. And perhaps, if you know somebody looking for an agency, we're open for business. Right, Mr. Nash?
And we eat pizza.
We eat pizza. Without further ado, we have our business birthday this week.
Everyone does celebrity birthday greetings, but The Focus Group is the only show in the universe that celebrates business birthdays.
So, John, this is a quick one, and I laughed about it only because it's probably a little bit of an inside joke for myself and some of our listeners that know my days at Subaru, but born February 13th, which would be on Thursday, is Donald Painos. Born February 13th, 1935. He died September 11th in 2018 at 83. An entrepreneur, he also founded two pharmaceutical companies. But he also, before I tell you about the pharmaceutical companies, he also founded something called Chateau Alon, which was a country club outside of Atlanta. And it was nicknamed by the people at Subaru Casa Bumfuck. Because we used to be sent...
I'm so curious how this ties in. All right, so Casa Bumfuck, right?
So it's the Chateau Alon and Resort, and it's outside of Atlanta, and it was supposed to be this, in the spirit of these European high-end wineries.
It's Versailles.
Right. But meanwhile, right at the end of the street, they're selling at the gas station sausage and biscuits, so you understand where we're at. So so this was planted in the middle of rural Georgia, and... The Painos family had befriended some folks at Subaru because they also had a motorsports division, and they were trying to build these motor cars. So Don Painos' son, Dan, decided he was going to go in the auto business. So they were trying to do Grand Prix and bring the Monte Carlo and all these things to the U.S. as well. So, of course, they suckered Subaru right in. And there was going to be a golf event, and there was a Saracen golf event. And no lie, John, I would say... Of the 600 employees, about close to 400 were flown down there to this event. Mahoney and I were just joking about it recently. You might have heard us in a sidebar, but we were given these condos that Tim had asked me last time we saw him. He said, do you know how much we ever spent on that event? I said, I don't, but it was hundreds, if not millions of dollars to bring the whole company down there to try to go in this immersion of what it was like to live in luxury and premiumness and all this other stuff, which... It really was a boondoggle, quite frankly. And so anyway, I picked him because I thought, you know, smart entrepreneur, he made a big bundle there. And Subaru ended up working with him for quite some time on the motorsports and on the golf events. But Don Painos, he was a character. He grew up in... he grew up outside of Pittsburgh. He studied at Duquesne. And he met his wife in the Army, the U.S. Army. He was stationed in Japan. And seeing his wife came back, and he worked for a pharmaceutical company in Pittsburgh. And while he was there, he headed up the research area. And he invented the time-release medication that they do through a transdermal patch.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially what's known as the nicotine patch, or how medicines can go in that way. But most of the application was for the nicotine patch. So that's how he said to the... to the pharmaceutical company, Milan was the name of it, and then they changed, spelled M-I-L-A-N, was a business partner. But they changed the name of the company to Mylan, M-Y-L-A-N, and this was in the late 60s. And he wanted to develop these patches, and his business partner said it was not a good idea. So they broke up, and he moved to Ireland because he wanted to do the patent. And there was something about in the U.S., mm-hmm. if he went overseas, he could change the patent. So anyway, he went over there and opened up another pharmaceutical company called the Elan Corporation and started making these nicotine patch sort of transdermal patches. And, of course, made a fortune.
Wow.
So and that's what funded his lifestyle to be able to do the Chateau Elan winery, the sports car business.
I'm still back at the Chateau.
Right. He had a number of, he opened something called the Diablo Grande gated community.
The Diablo Grande. Okay.
Diablo Grande.
The big
winery
devil
and resort gated community okay. outside San Jose.
Okay.
Also had a resort, St. Andrew's Resort and Spa in Scotland, which ended up being sold to Fairmont Hotels. But he had a number of golf events. One of his latest companies he had right before he died was something called Hydromentia, which was okay. a water pollution control firm. Yeah. He also sold LED displays, da-da-da-da-da. Anyway, he died at 83 of pancreatic cancer.
Oh, what a shame.
Yeah.
But, you know, and every time I hear when I hear pancreatic cancer, I wince because didn't our friend's dad pass from that?
Yeah.
By the time they discover it, Steve Jobs, like by the time they find it, it's already.
And it hides, right? They would say it hides kind of behind the stomach or something. Mm-hmm. But he was a character, but I picked it only because, I mean, there were certainly.
How were the condos anyway? Was it like IKEA furniture?
Oh, it was magnificent. No, they really were nice. It was nicely done, but misplaced. I mean, it was in this rural area outside of Atlanta, probably 40 miles outside of Atlanta. Had no business being there, but it was out of place, but it was, you know, huge fountains like Versailles, like you said, huge, magnificent two-story fountains and a winery and whatever. I remember they opened the Georgia wine from the winery, and one of the guys from Timothy McLean said, "Oh my God, I didn't order vinegar." He backs up.
Tim mentioned, we've mentioned, like, we were in LA recently for a project that we've been involved with. And a lot of it is, it's like the way back machine. We're being asked questions about things that happened with Subaru
30 years ago,
LGBTQ campaign. And what I'm most struck by, like when I was flying home from LA, I took a break from watching the show that I was watching on the plane, and I just thought to myself, my God, like, could you ever have scripted our careers and these people that we met and the situations you found yourself in, right?
Yeah. No,
I wouldn't change it for the world, because here you have the Versailles of Georgia.
What was so funny is somebody made comment about, and again, Don Panos was a good sport, because somebody said to him, because the wine wasn't that expensive, and he says, "No, this is the most expensive wine in the world." He said, because it costs so much money to try to make friggin' wine in Atlanta,
Georgia.
So he goes, "Really, it is the most expensive wine in the world." He said, "But, you know, I can't sell it for that." So, anyway, so that was a kind of a little bit of a selfish business birthday. But
oh, Tim.
But nonetheless,
it's a perfect business birthday. Nicely
nicotine
done.
Nicotine patches. Can you imagine? I often wonder about people that wander around unassuming, right? You would not know they invented something or did something
like that.
And they don't have a care in the world, right? Because he's got this money just keeps rolling in. We need something now.
Well, he really has no more cares in the world because
he's dead.
He's not of the world, but yeah.
Speaking of the living, John teased before we went to break our shop talk this week. And it involves Dolly Parton. And the headline is Three Things You Can Learn from Dolly Parton's Business Legacy. And John has brought this up in the past. John's always talked about Dolly Parton and the way she's managed her career. And this was done on a website called HelloAlice.com. But it's been well reported about Dolly and her business acumen. She turned 79 last January. I couldn't believe she's 79 years old.
I know.
And they said it was a perfect opportunity to talk to her about how she's certainly managed her career, built her empire that spans music, books, theme parks, hotels, wine. I don't know if she did wine.
Yeah.
Perfume, pet apparel, and more, all while staying true to her roots and values. Her estimated net worth is $650 million, but she's also donated millions of dollars to worthy causes. So there were three lessons that she wanted to share. John, do you want to share the first one that she offered?
Yeah, the first one, which I think is so true and so important for most businesses, long term especially, is lead with your values. She said this, "I do believe that any successful business starts from the top and works its way down. When Parton partnered to create her largest asset, Dollywood, she didn't just slap her name on the theme park. She made sure that the park reflected her Appalachian roots and values that were obviously reflected there too. This hands-on leadership approach helped transform Dollywood into one of the most visited attractions in the U.S. So, you know, lead with your values. She knew what made Dolly Parton Dolly Parton, and that had to be part of Dollywood. I think it's so easy to say it, but, you know, it's like integrity, right? If integrity is one of your primary values, bring that to your business.
And the second thing she espoused was community is good business. Parton is known for her generosity as much as her voice. She's deeply engages in any community in which she does business or owns property. She's committed to literacy and education. One of her most notable philanthropic efforts is the Imagination Library, which is a gift, a book gifting program, which she's distributed over 200 million free books to children worldwide. It also talks about the number of scholarships and education that she supported in Tennessee and other areas. And what they didn't mention here, but I do know this, is that she helped an awful lot of either inner city or African-American predominant high schools or colleges with their marching bands and uniforms and instruments.
Yep.
And she wanted no fanfare about it. It wasn't discussed. There was no big photo op. She just saw that a school needed instruments or needed new uniforms or needed to travel somewhere for a parade, perhaps a once in a lifetime thing for these kids. And she would donate and make it happen. And I give her an awful lot of credit
props.
Because I think
lots of props, man.
Companies that can do this and people that have this sort of privilege and wealth, like she's now, listen, she's worked her ass off for it, but she's also given back to her community. And they talk about the importance of giving back to your community is something you and I used to do a lot in our work with Subaru about how they would give back to certain communities where they sold cars and had business. So it's good business to be a part of the community.
To add to what Tim was saying, she said, identify what matters most to you and find ways to make an impact. And as Tim said, it could be charitable, it could be volunteering. You know, I look at something like this and all the anti-DEI stuff going on. So if you wipe out those initiatives, which everybody knows DEI is such a loaded word these days, not everybody even uses the same meaning for it. But if a company feels like giving to a local LGBTQ center because they know that that community has a need for that, shouldn't they be just allowed to do that without being harassed or bothered?
Right. And it may be simply that sometimes in small communities, they may be hooked in with Meals on Wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're feeding the elderly that are in, whether they're Black, white, gay, straight.
Yeah.
Right. And so, no, you're exactly right. You're exactly right.
And her third one here, her third axiom of doing business, I guess you could say it that way, empower others and maintain control. Parton's journey is rooted in empowerment. While she famously sang, "Why'd you come in here looking like that?" Parton has made it a priority to maintain control of her image and music catalog. And this goes back to something I've known about her for a long time. She once was interviewed and she said, you know, you have to be your own. You're your own best manager, because she saw too many people in the business get taken advantage of by unscrupulous folks or people trying to make a dime. So she was really on top of that. And that's kind of an interesting thing for her, because it's a male-dominated business. She is a very, you know, smart, strong-willed person, and yet she skyrocketed to fame by basically taking care of herself and being the best business manager she could be. As one of history's most famous female musicians and successful business owners, Parton has undoubtedly paved the way and inspired many people, especially women. So the same grit and determination you bring, you know, to the table, you expect from your employees, but you want to make sure they're doing the right thing. You give them the tools to do it, help them make decisions, and let them do their thing, but under the umbrella of, this is how Dolly Parton does it. We do it with integrity. We do it, et cetera.
I have a quick question for you. How do you think she knew to do that? Because we talk about in the up top, it said that she maintained control of her image. Remember, she used to say it costs a lot of money to look this cheap. But she
Another brilliant line.
Right. She made it a priority to maintain what her image was and how she presented herself. She controlled her music catalog. And as you mentioned, it was in a male-dominated industry. But she did this in the 60s. And I thought, how did she know how to do that? Or I wonder if somebody told her, you better manage yourself because you're going to get taken advantage of. You know, this famous story about Aretha Franklin, who she would go sing at a lot of these venues, and then they would never pay her after she sang. So that's why they said she always carried a purse, because she said, pay up, and she wanted cash or check or something, but I'm putting that in my bag before I sing one note, because she was tired of being taken advantage of. And I wonder if Dolly Parton had experienced the same sort of thing where people were trying to run roughshod over, and she finally just said, enough's enough. I know what I want to do. I know how I want to manage myself. But that's pretty tough lesson in the 60s, I would think, for women.
I would love, Tim, that's, I'm gonna R&D that. I'm going to research that, because something tells me you're onto something there, and that she had an experience that put her in the mindset of, you know what, I got to take care of me. Because I bet you she had something. It could have been early in the career when it was minor enough that it didn't affect her trajectory going forward. But I think you're probably right. I think something happened that said, hey, wait a minute, I've seen this before. You know, pre-Super Bowl, they were running a lot of different articles about different athletes. And they ran an article about a retired linebacker. I forget the guy's name now. He left the sport with about $100 million in earnings and recently declared Chapter 11. You know, you read this and you're like, how could you have had a salary of $100 million, and now you claim you can't even pay a $3,000 credit card bill and you're claiming Chapter 11? So it's a reorg. He then said in the interview that I read, he said, family did it to me. He said, I trusted some people, I tried to help people, and then I was taken advantage of. And it's that third one, and then I was taken advantage of, that I kind of cock my head and wonder about that.
Because you kind of have to allow somebody to take advantage of you a little bit.
Well, and it's a trust issue, right? So,
because if I had $100,000, if I had $100 million, I would at least have carved out $10 million to put in the bank and live off that, right? I mean, you know, interest or something.
Apparently, he set up...
That's a lot of money to spend.
Apparently, he set up some trust funds for people in his family.
Yeah.
So that money's locked away somewhere. And then he said he did things typical of what you do at his age. Sports cars, jewelry, women, expensive clothing, travel. And at first, you're like, that doesn't... But he said at one point he took some people on a trip, and it was $180,000. You do that 10 times, there's a... There's $2 million.
Still, $100 million. That's a lot of money. But when I worked in that short stint in franchising, they were always trying to get these young athletes that all of a sudden became flush with money to at least invest in something. And the franchisees and franchises and car dealers would often go after these athletes because they said, once you hit 30 or you're 35, you're not going to be playing anymore, and you're not going to have this sort of income. So preserve some of it now. And a lot of them never listened to it. There were a few that were smart enough to understand, but it's a big thing with some of these young athletes about preserving
especially
some of that
football.
Money.
Yeah. You know, I it's the tragedy to me when they reveal like a football player from the 70s or 80s who dies of something to do with neurological disorder, probably caused by concussion. And then you read later that they lived on their Social Security and some NFL pension, and everything else was gone. You know, I know salaries were different back in the day, but still, it's,
Well, that's why you even see these big stars, Dolly, like Betty Davis, right? She was getting paid $500 a week. And so there were no way getting the paydays. When you think about her, book of films, right? Her film catalog. Not paid much. And didn't have much when they died.
Nope. They ended up at some like actor's home or something. You're like, what the? Yeah, different times.
Yeah.
But you and I, I'll just finish by saying you were probably like me. I was sat down at a fairly early age out of college by some serious financial people who said, here is what you need to know. you need to start putting money away now. It doesn't have to be a huge amount, but you have to dedicate yourself to save. And I'd be like, well, maybe in a few years. Like, no, the future comes pretty quickly. Boy, did it come fast, right?
No, it's the best advice I got when I first was at a company that offered a 401k program.
Was that was it LTV?
No, LTV, well, they went bankrupt, so that wouldn't have helped me. But Subaru did, and I was same with you. I'm like, well, I don't know. I need money for rent. No. Whatever, you'll learn to live without it, whatever that percentage is.
Was that someone in HR that did that with you? Or
no, it was actually, I'll say who it is, a guy named Ted Paulette, who was a management associate with me. He was a year or two ahead of me. And he had asked me, he said, have you set up the 401k? And I said, I haven't. And I still remember him having the conversation with me in the car as we were driving and telling me what to do. And I better do it next week. And I need to call and get it set up. And I did. I listened to Ted, and I'm glad I did. So, because otherwise I would have procrastinated probably. And I would have, like you said, oh, I can't live without it. And
Mine came from our accountant, Jack.
Wow.
When I was in the process of leaving my first agency, or being asked to leave, depending on how you look at the buyout, he sat me down. He invited me to an office one day, and I met some guys from Oppenheimer and Company. I don't think Oppenheimer is around. They were absorbed by Bear Stearns or something. And I had an hour lecture on risk. Was I risk averse? Did I understand how this all worked? Dollar cost averaging, compounding. I walked out, my head almost exploded, but the basic thing was start now. Small steps lead to really big gains. And I think that I can never say enough thanks for that one, man, because I wasn't getting that from home.
No, and for me, and when people think, you know, you're exactly right, small gains. I mean, I was making, when I first started at Subaru back in the 90s, you're making $28,000, $30,000.
And that, Tim, that was pretty high. My first job out of college was like $17,500. I think
but it's not, you know, in the scheme of things, it's not a lot of money. So you're saying I've got to pay rent, I've got to do all these other things. But at the end of the day, if it's $100 a month or whatever it is, you could figure it out. But it's certainly now, 40 years later, I'm glad I did it.
And
there's friends of mine that I'm actually angry with, because I told them the same thing and they never did it. And now they're looking at retirement coming and they have nothing. And I just shake my head, because I thought you didn't want to listen.
Try living on that
Social
check.
Social Security.
Yeah. And it's that's a hard, hard one to do, man. All right.
And smart people, leave it too. They're smart people, generally.
Yeah, but, you know, but I think with money and debt and all that, like, you needed to be sat down by someone who trusted. You heard it at a certain time, and it took it plant. It was like a seed getting planted, and it grew. All right, we're going to leave it there for today, folks. Thank you for joining us here on the Focus Group. Focusgroupradio.com is our website. You can visit that and learn all about us, including our Tuesday podcast, TFG Unbuttoned, audio only. And you'll also learn about our sponsor here on the Focus Group, Deep Discount. You can get there by going to our site and clicking on the Deep Discount logo. A world of TV shows, movies, books, games, toys, you name it, exists there. It's a rabbit hole you'll never forget going down. And we invite you to go down every week. We'd like to remind everybody to please don't text and drive, arrive alive. And we will see you next week here on The Focus Group.
It's The Focus Group with Tim Bennett and John Nash. Accessible on all platforms. Subscribe, like, and rate us on your platform of choice. Learn more at focusgroupradio.com.
That was a stunning focus group.